What a peril that is. And yet you know the classic definition of preaching is that it's truth through personality. Or in other words, it's truth that is mediated out of experience. And I think if our preaching is going to be effective, it's got to be that kind of preaching. It's not a preaching from the teeth out. It's a preaching which rises from within the whole fabric of our own experience. And as I say, even if it's not experience, at least it is of aspiration. You may find prayer a tremendous battle in your own life, but at least you're in the battle. You're not leaving it on one side. And when you preach on prayer, at least you're preaching out of a sense of what God asks and what you are seeking. But some of our preaching is, as I've said, it's from the teeth out. As you listen, you don't feel that this man is speaking out of the whole fiber of his own experience of God. It's all the evangelical cliches. You couldn't pinpoint any error of doctrine in a single thing he says. Preaching the unfulfilled. Verse 47. Woe unto you, for ye build the sepulchres of the prophets, and your fathers killed them. Matthew's account says, and adorn or garnish the sepulchres of the righteous. What would you call that? I call that reverencing the unwanted. Ye build, ye garnish and adorn the tombs and sepulchres of the prophets, and your fathers kill them. And I think the implication is you would do exactly the same if the prophets appeared again today. Reverencing the unwanted. There's a demand of orthodoxy that, of course, they're prepared to meet. To do anything less than reverence the prophets would put them out of count, out of court. They would be guilty almost of blasphemy. So they're not afraid to pay lip service to the facts of history that these men had been the mouthpieces of God. There are various areas of orthodoxy that we are prepared to pay our respect to. One is the concept of revival. I don't think there's a single evangelical here that would say that they were not in favor of revival. A terrible thing if anybody did. But not one of us, I don't think, would say, well, I'm a gimmit. And we look back and we see how revival has taken place here and there. There are areas, there are churches, there are cities, there are communities that have known revival. And we say, isn't it wonderful? Wish it could happen here. But deep down, we're jolly glad it isn't happening here. The demand of orthodoxy they were prepared to meet, the distance from reality they were glad to observe. Revival would be too disturbing. It would be too demanding. It's fine that these prophets lived their lives. When they did, we admire them for saying what they said. When they said it, we wouldn't like to have them here saying that sort of thing now. I was talking to Kenneth Hooker just the other day at Cockfosters. I've paid what may well be a farewell visit, I suppose, to Cockfosters because Kenneth Hooker's leaving and there'll be a break then in continuity. I don't know whether I'll be back again, but I was reading the Cockfosters magazine and they had a write-up as to the kind of vicar and qualifications that would do for the next vicar of Cockfosters. It was quite a staggering list. You know the kind of thing. And he told me that the editor was going to put in the next issue of the magazine, an application, which would run something along the lines of, I've not been in any church very long. The longest possibly 2 years, or maybe a little longer. I've always had a very rough time in any church I've been in, and usually ended up by being thrown out. I've been in prison a number of times, and I've suffered a lot at the hands of the government and been flogged. I've really had a very rough time, but still I'd like to apply for the charge. Signature, Paul. None of us have been in prison, have we? Maybe one or two have, if you've come from certain countries. But if the Spirit of God really started moving in our land, would we really welcome him? Or would we be the first to run away from the heat? I don't think we can transport revival and transplant it. God has a way of working in reviving grace in different areas, I'm sure of that. God very seldom does a duplicate, and if the wind blows from the south in one place, may it blow from the west or the east in another. But if revival really came, would we welcome it? Reverencing the unwanted. And then the last reference is to me possibly the most humbling of all. Verse 52. Woe unto you, lawyers, for ye have taken away the key of knowledge. Ye entered not in yourselves, and them that were entering in ye hindered. I call that hindering the unenlightened. Ye have taken away the key of knowledge. Ye entered not in yourselves, and them that were entering in ye hindered. Two thoughts here as we come to a close. First, that there is an assumption made by Christ that there were people trying to enter. Them that were entering in. The assumption that there are those seeking the light. That there are those who are looking for the warmth of the love of God and the fellowship of the family of God. How we need to be reminded of this, that man is never at ease, man is never at home away from God. That there are others looking towards the Christian church for an answer. And I think possibly more so now than ever. Them that were entering in. People trying to get in. And the assertion made by Christ was that they find that there's someone standing in the way and blocking the road. Them that were entering in, ye hindered. Sometimes if you and I are foolish enough, we may try to think how many people we've helped to find Christ. Well, that's a stupid thing to do, but sometimes some of us are a bit stupid and we maybe look back and we think of various people whom in the mercy of God and in the grace of God, they found Christ under our ministry. Somebody very kindly came up to me here at Keswick saying that they'd been converted under my ministry. I will say I've got two families. One I know the size of, the other I haven't a clue. My own family, according to the flesh, there are four. But the spiritual family, those who are my children in the faith, I just don't know how many there are, and it's quite exciting when you meet your children. But you didn't know where yours. Well, we'll get a surprise in heaven, how many we've helped. But have you ever stopped to ask yourself how many you've hindered? I can think of a minister who emptied a church because he got a vile temper and he couldn't control it. Are we full of truth, but destitute of grace? There are so many evangelicals that are fastidiously exact in the truth of the evangel. But when our Lord came, we are told the Word was made flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld his glory, the glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. A year or two back, when I was not speaking at Keswick but was here, I was given the task of taking prayers at the speaker's house. And I was tremendously arrested by that verse. The Word was made flesh and dwelt among us. And we beheld his glory, the glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. And I remember sharing three thoughts with the speakers there that came to me with great freshness and thrust the humanity through which the glory shone, the proximity at which the glory showed, the divinity of which the glory spoke. And you notice it was something that was seen. The Word was made flesh and dwelt among us, and we didn't hear, we beheld the glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. And I honestly think today that it's not so much what people hear, it's what they see that really matters. Do they see that we are full of grace as well as truth? The perils of the pastor. Well, as I say, I haven't been sharing these thoughts with you so that we might be accused, but so that we might be alert. So that when we go back to our charges and back to our people, and what an incredible privilege that is, we may be aware of the possible danger of stressing the unimportant, seeking the unmerited, concealing the unworthy, preaching the unfulfilled, reverencing the unwanted, and hindering the unenlightened. Our Lord has a lovely phrase concerning the lamp. In Luke's account, he speaks of the lighted candle, which is put in such a position that they which are entering in may see the light. I'm a great believer in preaching. If you've never read Tillich's book, What is the Trouble with the Church, may I suggest it's a book that you ought to read. In that, right at the beginning, a quote is given: people are not tired of preaching, but they may be tired of our preaching. I'm a great believer in preaching, but preaching isn't everything. Being an evangelical, being orthodox, isn't everything. And what you and I are meant to be is what our Lord meant when he said, as the Father hath sent me, even so send I you. And when you and I asked, why did the Father send the Son, part of the answer was to reveal. Not to redeem, just, but to reveal. Christ says, as I was sent to reveal the Father, so I send you to reveal me. And the question is, as it was brought out in the Bible reading tonight, the real final goal of it all is that you and I should be Christ-like. Not that we should be orthodox, necessarily. That's not the ultimate goal, but that we should be Christ-like. Years ago, with this I close, I remember a mother telling me how on one occasion a little boy who was with her at Seaside Mission said to her, as she was putting him to bed, "Mummy, what was Jesus like?" Children have a delightful way of asking us really difficult questions. And if we're wise, we'll give them a chance to answer it themselves, and usually they do. And she was completely stunned. And the little fellow looked at her, and she said, "Well, I don't know, sonny." And then this little fellow, who had been going along to the Seaside Mission services, looked up brightly and said, "Oh, Mummy, I know what Jesus was like." And she said, "What was he like?" And then, naming one of the workers in the Seaside Mission, she said, "Mummy, I think that Jesus must have been like Mr. So-and-so, and he smiles. Ever anybody ever say that about you? I think he must have been like the vicar, like the minister, when he smiles. So there we are, brethren. What a fantastic position to occupy. What a privilege to have entrusted to us. And you and I go out to our people sent by the Son, not simply to reveal, not simply to redeem, not simply to renew, but above almost everything else, to reveal Jesus Christ, so that people wondering what he's like have only got to look at you, and then they'll know.